Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce our vast cast that we have today, Dr. Joel Schultz. So thank you, Chief, for being on the show. We appreciate it. And it's a good show, guys, because, you know, after the weekend, we have a lot of news to cover, and believe me, we do. And I want to mention our sponsors. Please support our sponsors, guys. They go to the great lengths to bring this quality content to you. We have Gauls at Gauls.com, ComplianceTechnologies.com, which is our satellite sponsor. We also have AeroPrecisionUSA.com, our arm sponsor. Gunlearn.com, MyMedicare.live, SafeguardRecruiting.com, our streaming sponsor. And yes, thanks to them, we're streaming over a million people during the live show right now. TwoBells.com, they built their new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. So if you want to check out our cool gear, and guys, the prices are bare bones, rock bottom. We don't make a dime off of anything in the store. Go to LeoRoundtable.com, go to the online store, check out all the gear that we have, shirts and hats and pants and shorts. And I mean, if you're looking for something that's not there, get a hold of me. Or Tracy at Two Bells that built the store, and we'll find it and get it on there for you. Also, a shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian. Also, Ray Dietrich with FormerLawman.com. And finally, our very own Travis Yates with LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make this show happen. And now, what in the world are we going to be talking about today? Guys, put your seatbelts on. Deadly eye shooting raises questions about law enforcement policies on shooting into a moving vehicle. Ah, I can't wait to talk about that one. And then we've got, I'm just going to title the update on the Minneapolis shooting. I've got a ton of articles. I'm going to be going through mostly the titles to let you guys know what's going on. You know, the officer having to go in the hiding threats and all that stuff. But there are a few of the articles that we're going to take some snippets out of that have some a little bit more information. And then we've got, we're going to jump to Portland because, you know, 24 hours after what happened in Minneapolis happened, we had a similar incident that happened in Portland. Then we got Christopher Taylor. He is reinstated as a peace officer. It was licenses anyhow. We got DHS officer Knox loser to the ground in Minnesota for blocking their vehicle. That was a that was an interesting one. We've got Idaho Falls police officer fatally shot a domestic disturbance suspect when he grabbed a large knife. And we have 10 Florida first responders are fired. Four are charged after a 19-year-old is whipped with his own belt and waterboarded outside the police the fire station. Not police, the fire station. You know how those firefighters are, Chief. We got body cam video showing a man. You do. Yeah, we won't hold that against you either. Body cam video shows a man throwing a Washington trooper to the ground and stealing her patrol car. And, you know, we had previously covered the story, but now we got body cam. We got a lot more information. We're going to touch on it again, but we have covered it. But I remember during the story, I thought I had read somewhere that she was a supervisor, and sure enough, she's a lieutenant. There were a lot of female law enforcement officers involved in this one. We'll discuss that. Judge rejects Democrats' lawsuit seeking access to Florida's alligator Alcatraz. Wow, that happened. And then we got Oklahoma Highway Patrol dash cam video. It shows, you know, a trooper in training being taught how to do a pit maneuver. And it was successful. And it was like coaching, you know, in the cockpit, you know, and you guys get to see how it goes down. So it's pretty cool. So Chief, if you're, and I'm getting a little background noise, Chief, but if you're ready, Chief, we'll go jump to the first one here. WTSP.com, deadly eye shooting raises questions about law enforcement policies on shooting into a moving vehicle. Before the show started, I was telling the Chief that I have been begging law enforcement agencies around the country, because the writing's been on the wall, right? I know I'm not the only guy that saw it coming. You remember the first time, Chief, we saw a cop shooting through the windshield at a bad guy while he's driving. And then, of course, after that happened, and that got circulated. How many times have we seen that happen now? I'm not challenging the justification of those kinds of shootings, but what I am saying is that, like this article points out, there are questions now about law enforcement policies, not about them having to do it, but having policies about shooting. It talks about into moving cars. I really don't mind broadening that, you know, shooting at or from a moving vehicle, and whether or not they're occupied or not. Because we just don't get enough training like that. And so even though you have a policy maybe prohibiting it, but then you've got an officer that has to do it in order to stay alive or to protect somebody, then you've got an issue too. And you're certainly, if it's not in policy, you're not training officers how to do that. So, but Chief, you know, you're not only an academic, which is a good thing. You've been there, done that, and you've been a chief at different locations a number of times. So, can't wait to get your input on this one.
Well, I've also been hit by cars twice.
Wow. Without wearing a nice uniform. Did you have ice on a rain jacket or something?
No, but it was very dark, and I was jaywalking. The other one, I was I don't need to tell you war stories, but you know, I think Danny King Friday said we don't really know what to do with moving cars and shooting in and out of them, and so we need to have the research on the few anomalous, I mean, relatively few, considering all the different types of dangerous encounters and assaults. The vehicular assault is one of them. And we usually see one or two intentional fatal vehicle assaults in the officer down reports every year. Most, of course, of the deaths of cars hitting cops are not intentional. But the bottom line is every policy has either specifically stated or at least implied, there's this asterisk that says, but you do what you have to do. I mean, there's no policy, no matter how clear cut you think it might be, that's going to cover every situation. So, and you know, the other thing is when particularly in light of the two incidents that we've been talking about with our federal agents in Minnesota, it's not really relevant for the criminal charge whether the officer was in policy or out of policy, or whether he had trained or not. That's going to be a matter of question in a civil suit, and I don't imagine there'll be much of a civil suit. I imagine there'll be a check written without a court battle, regardless of the true liability that a jury would find. The question is, was he
a check written for the Minneapolis, even though it's a federal.
Yeah, I think so, is because it'll be an obviously a 42 USC 1983 lawsuit. They're probably, you know, her wife is probably getting daily phone calls from people saying, hey, can I take your case on a contingency? Oh. And we can talk about the beauty of federal suits for lawyers is they don't take a percentage like they would in a state suit. They get paid for whatever their expenses were. So the plaintiff, if they prevail, the plaintiff gets the whole award, and then lawyer's fees are awarded separately to the attorney. So it's a win-win if they both go that route. But as far as the policy goes, I'm not sure that we have the research to look at as many of those encounters as we possibly can and break it down. You know, what are the physics of it? What's the ballistics of it? What are the time motion perceptions of it? You know, there's quite a bit of stuff in the Force Science Institute. Are you a pilot by any chance, Chip?
I'm not, but I scared my wife recently because I told her I want to get my pilot's license, and she laid the law down. No, I'm not.
She'll let you jump out of an airplane, but she doesn't want you to fly it, right?
She would, yeah. As long as she was the one in charge of packing the parachute, yeah.
there's research that comes out of pilot training about this idea of looming, that sometimes things don't appear. They might appear on camera, but they don't appear to the person scanning the skies until they're right up there. And then it's kind of a visual distortion. So that could be a factor in particularly a rapidly moving or rapidly approaching vehicle. So I don't really know if we have enough science behind the dynamics of a vehicle assault and an armed response to really make a cohesive policy. And again, if we have a policy, there's going to be that statement that should be in every policy. This is a guideline that can apply to every possible situation. And at the end of the day, or at the end of the event, or before the event ends, if it's a question of, well, am I going to violate policy or am I going to save my life? Guess what? Going to save my life.
Go home. Yeah. You know, and I know we're getting close to our first break. I really would like to see policy, because I know that they're not going to do training or get a course curriculum on it unless they've got some kind of policy addressing it. I know that in Tampa, you know, we prohibit shooting at moving vehicles unless they are a risk of serious bodily injury or, you know, death to us or somebody else. And so they're smart enough not to cut that completely out. There is something I want to bring into the equation, though, but we got 15 seconds before our commercial, our first commercial break. So guys, we're going to take a brief commercial break. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
My family only cares about one thing, that I come home safe.
At Gall's, every order begins with a promise. Made with purpose. Stitched for support. Backed with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
Now it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor. And, you know, they're committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-ethics manner, utilizing their CD3. And that stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now, is called the Glove. It's helped officers tens of thousands of times. I heard the other day it's been over 250,000 deployments with no injuries and no deaths. Can you imagine that? They've actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and their revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turn to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions to ever come along. So go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip and the doctor sent you. Again, that is ComplianTechnologies.com. Welcome back, Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. We've been talking about having policy involving officers, you know, shooting, you know, at moving vehicles, basically. And I know the chief just spoke. What I had mentioned was, is that I really would like to see policy, because I want training involved in it. So, but here's where I'm going with the training, Chief. I know that there's more complicated training. We're talking about, you know, G-forces and physics and, but little things that we've seen, and I've had people on the show that are smarter and know more than I do. Even like Scott Steyer, our Green Beret Delta Force, you know, contributor that's on the show. Like if you're in your vehicle and you're shooting through the windshield, and every one of your shots is having to penetrate and break through the glass in your windshield, the odds of you getting anything on target are extremely limited. And even if you're able to get something, it's going to be shrapnel, right? However, if you are able, even with a rifle, if you're able to break a hole through the windshield and then shoot through that hole at your target, game changer. But a lot of guys, you know, you don't normally see guys doing that in the heat of the moment, but little things like that, like training, it would help them. You may lose the first one or two shots, maybe negligible, right? As far as, you know, the results that you get or the desired results. But after you get that hole through that windshield and you're able to, you know, shoot through that hole without any obstructions, you know, altering, you know, the course of fire, you know, little things like that. And then of course, you know, shooting through a windshield and through shooting through a side window are different. And maybe even when guys are taking cover behind vehicles in their you know, engine blocks, we know are going to be, you know, if you have a guy with a high powered rifle shooting at you, you're going to want to be behind an engine block and not just the vehicle door or the door jam. That's not going to do the trick, but just reinforcing things like that. And there's a difference between if you're shooting at or from a moving vehicle, you know, whether you're stationary or you're moving, big difference. And then if you're shooting at a vehicle that is either stationary or moving, or whether it's occupied or not. And then we've had some other instances where we've had shootouts where there has been a child in the car or someone else that wasn't immediately visible, you know, child sitting low in the seat and stuff. Most of the time, from my recollection, remarkably, miraculously, the child or that person has normally not been hit or struck or killed. And we've been very lucky on that. But that's why I would like to see more training. So these guys are going through all the scenarios that they're going through. They need to don't assume that there's nobody else in that car, you know, like a child or anything, you know. So just those are just the things off the top of my head that I would like to see involved in training. And I would like them to have a policy in place so that it would allow them to at least give some form of training, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think with the increase in the use of vehicles and terror attacks, and the use of vehicles to block law enforcement in protest efforts, I think perhaps the statutes ought to be changed to be clear about the felonious character of using a vehicle as a weapon. And I'm not sure we have standard clarity on that. You know, the thing about the Minneapolis shooting that stuns me is the woman's cavalier attitude about screwing around with federal agents. And I can't understand the psychology of it, particularly when you see that freeze frame of the last photo before the shots of her, the last video of her. She has this expression on her face that either she's oblivious to the hazard, she's taking delight in harassing folks, or she's just psychotic and doesn't understand that. And all of those may be wrong, because I don't want to make these blanket assumptions like these other knuckleheads do in the media. You know, I've discovered, here's a bumper sticker phrase for you: ignorance begets great confidence.
Oh, that is good.
I'm seeing that in a lot of commentary. So once we need to make sure that suspects realize that using a vehicle to interfere with police officers, and the Philadelphia superintendent, God bless him, the one police executive that was willing from a major city and from a blue city that was willing to go to the media and said, don't block a law enforcement with your vehicle, because they have to assume that an ambush is coming. And we don't know, we can't predict what that vehicle's going to do. We don't know if this Minneapolis woman was gonna make a U-turn or continue and hit some innocent person. So, the idea that was in any way non-threatening or peaceful or could have been de-escalated is just a breach of common sense and the laws of physics.
Oh, it was de-escalated rapidly.
Well, you know, and we have to recognize, when we talk about de-escalation, we're talking about trying to get to a place from where there's a high threat of somebody getting hurt, and we're trying to get it to a lower threat of somebody getting hurt. And that whole arc of de-escalation may include taking out the person who is creating the threat and protecting both the officers and the bystanders. So you're right. That situation was de-escalated. Nobody else got hurt by this person's highly dangerous activity. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know if there were injuries. The officer definitely got struck and he got dragged. That is unequivocal. We can't even, that's not even an arguing point anymore. We've got clear video footage on that. But you've given me a good segue to get into the second main topic, talking about Minneapolis. If you're okay, we got a minute and 20 seconds before our next commercial break. But if you're okay, can I go through these titles real quick here and just kind of like we can continue that conversation? Chief? All right.
So yeah, look, absolutely. Yeah.
So look. Anyhow. So here's what we have, guys. I'm gonna go ahead and we're gonna do a segue in the talking about Minneapolis, and then we're gonna be talking about Portland. So on this one, I've got a number of articles, and I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I'm gonna cover titles, and then I'm gonna go into a little bit more of these. But the sources are wide ranging: WashingtonExaminer.com, Modernity News, AmericaFirstReport.com, Infowars.com, RBMNews.com, and LawOfficer.com. And, you know, we're going to be going to commercial break, but let me just start off the first one. The Minneapolis shooting, that settles it. That's from the Washington Examiner.
every morning, just so you know. It'll be the same plate when you come talk to us later. That's fine. U.S. citizen, former country. You want to come at us? You want to come at us? I say go get yourself some lunch, big boy. Go ahead.
Out of the car. Get out of the car. Get out of the car.
Oh!
Although the argument goes on, the video of the Minneapolis shooting taken by the Immigration Customs Enforcement agent who shot Renee Good effectively answered the question of whether the agent, Jonathan Ross, acted lawfully. The video and other evidence suggest that he actually did. More information coming back, guys. We'll be right back. All right, guys, introducing Aero Defense by Aero Precision at AeroPrecisionUSA.com, a beacon of durability, dependability, and all-American craftsmanship in the realm of duty rifles. And yes, we're talking about long guns. They're born from an aerospace engineering company, so you know these guys know what they're doing. And Aero Defense by Aero Precision, they demand perfection because selling anything else, you know, doesn't even match up on the lineup. So visit AeroPrecisionUSA.com for a lineup that matches every discipline because they basically have something for everybody. And, you know, they've been doing this back since 1994. They've been quietly leading the AR builder parts domain, but now they're making waves in what they call a soulless bolt action stand. That's not all. Their M4E1 Pro and their Mod 4 handguards, they already hit the market at AeroPrecisionUSA.com, the embodiments of duty rifle excellence, but now they're tailoring it for the civilian customer. That means that now you guys can start getting your hands on the Primo stuff and their M5 AR three-way platform spectacular. So don't settle for less when you can have the best. Head over to AeroPrecisionUSA.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief, and we're in the midst of talking about this debacle in Minneapolis. And really, it's pretty straightforward, I believe, but we're just going through the headlines to catch people up on what's happened over the weekend. So we've got our very first article that I just touched on, the WashingtonExaminer.com, where the Minneapolis shooting, it says that settles it. And they're saying that, you know, the agent who shot Renee Good effectively answered the question of whether the agent, Jonathan Ross, acted lawfully, and that the video and other evidence as well suggests that he actually did. And it goes on to say that regardless of who you believe, Renee Good's death resulted from either her poor decision-making and gratuitously courting danger or Trump's excessive zeal in ramping up immigration enforcement. The legal case comes down to whether the agent reasonably perceived a potentially lethal threat. And this is what former federal prosecutor Andrew McCarthy wrote. And he continues saying that from what we have seen so far, he did, meaning that he did reasonably perceive a potentially lethal threat. The next title we've got, ICE agent at Center Minneapolis shooting reportedly is in hiding. And it says a federal officer swarmed the agent's home and packed up his belongings. Next title, ICE agent involved in shooting is getting death threats, Border Czar says. That's Tom Homan. Then we got wife of woman shot by ICE becomes a millionaire. Thanks, if you guys can believe it, to a GoFundMe page and donation. So Becca Good, according to this article, it says that she's been trash talking ICE agents and encouraging her partner before the shooting, has received an avalanche of donations. Nearly 40,000 people contributed to the fundraiser, and it was it gives the title of it. I'm not going to give it out because I don't want to have any part in, you know, in people, you know, going there. But the campaign was paused after it reached $1.5 million, if you can believe that. Then we got the next title. January 6th cop Michael Fanone now wants Americans to shoot ICE agents. I had a trouble believing this until I read this. It's got a picture of him. I believe that he was all tatted up, and he just didn't. I was just, what was coming out of his mouth just didn't make sense. But former Minneapolis Police Department officer Michael Fanone delivered a scathing critique of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement and also Customs and Border Protection. He accused the agencies of repeated abuses of power and called on elected officials and law enforcement leaders to take immediate action to protect the public. He goes on and on in this rant, very anti-cop. I don't know what happened to this guy after January 6th, or maybe he was just one of these guys that never should have got hired, or if he's I don't know if he's a DEI hire or whatever, but it gets worse. He dismissed calls from police leadership for calm and peaceful protest. He said that these statements failed to address what he described as immediate and ongoing threats to public safety. And then he goes down that rabbit hole that we know better than too. He goes, quote, "I don't need to hear from the chief of police that we all need to remain calm and protest peacefully. F you and F that." And he didn't use the word F. He used a four-letter word that starts with an F. And then he goes on, Well, he suggested that if authorities fail to protect the public, citizens may feel compelled to rely on their constitutional rights for self-defense. And then he's talking about the Second Amendment. So he says, quote, because if you're not going to do it, then it's time for the American people to organize and to utilize their Second Amendment right to protect themselves, unquote, if you can believe that. Then we go on our next title, radical anti-ICE mobs, that they are actually hunting down federal law enforcement officers in Minneapolis. They're going to hotels and staking places out, but their target are the feds. And now we finally have Chicago Police Superintendent, who you just talked about, Dr. Schultz. Chicago Police Superintendent, if you box in agents, it's reasonable to believe it's an ambush. So we got Chicago Police Department Superintendent Larry Snelling held a forceful press briefing after the weekend confrontations involving federal immigration agents and protesters. And the superintendent, he criticized dangerous crowd behavior. And he said Snelling issued a blunt warning about dangerous protests tactics, saying that if protesters box in law enforcement officers, including ICE, that they are reasonable to believe that it's an ambush. And I tell you, I was impressed with what he had to say. Chicago, crap.
Chief? Well, and he's, you know, he's absolutely right. I think, ironically, when we see these protesters jumping in front of law enforcement vehicles and tossing rocks and blocking them in with vehicles, it is, I think, a very ironic indication that they trust law enforcement not to hurt them. So if they're protesting by putting themselves in harm's way, expecting that the cops will not hurt them or resist them actively, which often is the case, It's just a twisted type of thinking that says, you know, I don't know where all this fits in here. You know, it's interesting with the anti-law enforcement rhetoric that I think basically was gas on the fire with the Obama administration and the and Ferguson. We spent since the 1990s, since the Clinton administration, talking about community policing, connecting with the community, partnering with the community, playing basketball with the kids, playing stickball with the kids, having these little special moments. And at the end of 30 years of community policing, which I wrote my dissertation on, we have probably the highest quality of law enforcement ever in the history of the United States. Across the country, from small agencies to federal agencies, we really are doing a magnificent job in many, many ways. And yet we have the most hostility against law enforcement that we've seen in certainly in my career in lifetime. So I just wonder what kind of monster we've created when we've kowtowed to the public and tried to be friends with them. And they're not being friends back in many, many ways. And I know this is a minority of people, and we still have great support for law enforcement. But these kind of events erodes the support of the bystander who is basically pro-law enforcement and law-abiding citizen. But they hear all of these pronouncements, and they see these supposed masses of people, and they begin to think, well, you know, maybe something is wrong, and maybe I should be more cynical and skeptical. And so, you know, my fear is that we can't write off these protesters and these extremists and this insane rhetoric, and that ex-cop commentator, he needs to be locked up. It has some effectiveness in that it's eroding some of the support for law enforcement, and our response narrative just can never and should never reach the same level of rhetoric and anger to rage bait and get clicks and views and ratings that the other extremists will get. So I'm very concerned about the future of law enforcement in America, and the future of peace for the streets. And the other thing that stuns me is we're not hearing anything about the 1,500 violently criminal aliens that were arrested by the ICE operation in Minneapolis alone. Yeah. And we hear very little about the gang connections of the two people who were shot by federal officers in Portland, and the fact that they were involved in a shooting and gang activity that was a matter of current investigation by the Portland Bureau of Police. Our focus has been manipulated so much to that our presupposition is no longer, as a public, our presupposition is, well, I trust the police. They were probably right, but we'll look into it. And now the presupposition is, wow, I can't understand this, and there must be some fault there, and now I should fear the police. So it's a, I think it's a very tenuous time in history. You know, we've lived through Civil War, we lived through the Revolution, we lived through the Depression, we lived through the Obama and Biden administration. So I think we'll get through this, but the seeds that have been planted of mistrust. Are yielding fruit, and we're going to have to deal with that somehow.
Our first video, rumble.com. This is Butter, our favorite law enforcement video channel. DHS officer knocks this guy to the ground in Minnesota for blocking their vehicle. This guy, this protester, and this is after all the stuff has been going down. I believe, I don't remember looking at that, but I believe this is afterwards. But this guy standing right in front of a DHS vehicle. It's got agents in it, and he's blocking their way. Now, as the Chicago police superintendent just said, and as Chief Schultz said, you know, these guys are, look, attack. Look, it doesn't matter that there could be a mob, that this guy's stopping the vehicle so people can like surround it or take him out or sniper or whatever. He's blocking the vehicle. We know there's hostilities. So we have a guy, an agent gets out of that truck, goes up, and he body checks this guy and knocks him silly on the back of the ground. And then the vehicle is able to proceed because, you know, that vehicle needs to keep moving to get out of there before it gets worse. And then you got the woman that's you know, filming that going, oh, I can't believe, you know, they're screaming and stuff. So we're 30 seconds before our next break. But that is another example on I would like to see more of that, and maybe it would discourage the people from doing what they're doing and trying to ambush these ICE agents. I don't know. I'm going to start the music. Hold that thought, Chief. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us into trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and also disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at gunlearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Afianko. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since way back in actually 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, the founder, Daniel Kelly, has got a deal for you. If you have your own agency, if you're a chief or a sheriff, you can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. Go to gunlearn.com to get more information. Again, that is gunlearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Joel Schultz, former police chief. We got Jimmy Knepp on writing in that two and a half tons, the equivalent of a rhino or a hippo coming at you. I never really thought of it that way, Jimmy, on Facebook. But that's a good analogy. You know, Jimmy knows that I like word. I need word pictures. You know, when I read books, I like the pop pictures and like the little pop-up things that read, you know, that's all me. So yeah, words, not too good with words, but yeah, I love pictures. But as Brett would say, but Chief, go ahead. And I know we're talking about, before we went to commercial break, we talked about that video of that DHS agent getting out of the vehicle after the protester stopped and stood in front of the vehicle, and he didn't mow the guy down, but he got out and he body checked that guy. He didn't slug, he didn't punch him. He body checked him and knocked him out of the way. And guess what? The vehicle, they didn't sit there and beat up on the guy. The vehicle continued on, and other ICE agents, you know, dealt with this guy, but, or DHS agents, but Chief.
Well, and I said this the other day on the show. I think ICE is going to have to evaluate tactics in terms of force protection. They're going to have to anticipate that there is going to be intelligence about their movements and their tactics. And if they get into routines, then it's going to be predictable. They may need to, and I'd hate to see it. They may need to start deploying in armored vehicles for personnel protection and to be able to maybe something bladed that'll push vehicles out of the way. I don't know what the answer is, but they continue to operate in a very vulnerable way, and not only vulnerable to attack and distraction, which is a big thing, but also vulnerable to being egged into having to respond in a way that the optics are going to be used against them, just like, a lot of use of force issues. Because, all it takes, you have a whole set of circumstances. And the court has recently clarified that when we're looking at a use of force, we need to look at the whole picture. Before the previous legal theory was you just look at the time that the officer made that decision to pull the trigger or use deadly force. And now, they said there's legal relevance to what's happening before. And I think that'll go to this officer's advantage, because that was significant, I think, in his decision.
Chief, I'll tell you, if that happened in Tampa, we would knock them silly. There's no way that would happen. And we have, we have a Democratic mayor, but we are in a sheriff that is, he's a Democrat, but he's either a left-leaning Republican or a right-leaning Democrat. But let me tell you, that said, we would knock them. It would never happen where I live and in a lot of the jurisdictions. So I really, the lack of police, the police are allowing this stuff to go on. We would never allow that to happen here. So I don't lose sight of that. It's happening in Minneapolis, and this is going on in Portland. These are typically places that are just so, I hate to say anti-law enforcement, because they have law enforcement that works and components in there, but they don't back up the law enforcement officers, and they're instructed not to back up ICE officers. So if that could just get fixed alone, this problem, I believe, for the most part, would be solved. You may have an agitator here or there, but it's just these liberal politicians that are in charge and giving instructions to these officers not to back up, and they're allowing this to go on. These ICE agents shouldn't even have to deal with this kind of crap. This should be local law enforcement all day long, preventing this stuff from going on. But my two cents.
No, I agree. But when you said if this were to happen in Tampa, that's not a question with these ICE operations in these hostile territories. You can't say, well, if this is it is going to happen. When this happens, what are we going to do? And I agree that if they had a phalanx of protective local police officers, these things would not be allowed to happen. And it just gripes me to no end for the Minneapolis officials to say, hey, we didn't want to have anything to do with this operation, but we want to be involved in the investigation. You already played your hand. You folded. You're out. Yeah. Shut up.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, Chief, we got to cover the next one, the Portland one. I'm curious. I can't wait, because we're talking about a police chief here, and this is a Portland police chief. I can't wait to hear your words, and I have no idea what you're going to say, because we haven't really talked about this. But newsbreak.com, Portland police chief cries while confirming the pair shot by a Customs and Border Patrol agent were tied to the Tren de Aragua gang, the Venezuelan gang. The Portland's police chief broke down in tears Friday while confirming that two illegal immigrants shot by a federal agent had suspected ties to this violent Venezuelan gang, according to KGW News. Portland police chief, his name is Bob Day. He said the two suspects wounded, in a U.S. Customs and Border Protection encounter, they had a nexus to the gang, backing up a Department of Homeland Security statement released earlier in the day. So it ends up that the feds were actually right. Now, CBP agent opened fire on Venezuelan gangsters. It gives their names out after they weaponized their vehicle fleeing a traffic stop that happened on Thursday after what happened in Minneapolis. Now, DHS involved. Both these people remain hospitalized in stable condition, and they're in federal custody now. Now, the police chief said that he initially hesitated to disclose the suspected gang ties because he was concerned about what he called the, and I'm going to put this in quotes, quote, historic injustice of victim blaming, unquote. And he stressed that the shooting remains under investigation, that the information was released for transparency. But I also read that he didn't want to adversely affect, you know, Hispanics and people. You know, my wife's Colombian. You think that they're taking it as a slight that these guys are connected with a gang that ended up getting shot in Portland? But this chief is crying. I've seen so much commentary in social media about that. What are your thoughts, Chief?
Well, you know, the first press meeting that came out with this phalanx of politicians that wanted to get their sound bites on and their pictures on the screen. I mean, it was like I said before, it looked like the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. It was dozens of officials. And the chief tried to be kind of neutral and not quite as antagonistic as the other politicians were, or accusatory. But he bent over backwards to say we were not involved in this operation, had no involvement in the immigration enforcement. And my thinking is, you knew these guys because they were already suspects in a previous violent gang related shooting. You should have been working with federal authorities to solve that crime and get those people off the street. So, and I want to give them as much credit as I can. And I don't have any problems with police officials getting a little emotional on things when they've got bad news. But here's my subjective presuppositional interpretation of his tears is, I'm so sorry, these weren't innocent people, so that we could be really clear about that this was not a justified shooting and this was a terrible injustice and we would never have done anything like that. I think his crocodile tears were because that these people were criminals and they precipitated the violence that caused their end of their lives. That's the only thing I can figure. I'm not sure what he was upset about, other than it really ruined his narrative that these people were really bad guys.
Yeah. And of course, these guys were shot and injured, unlike, you know, Minneapolis, where she was shot and killed. But of course, look, if they could have easily been killed, and that, you know, the same things at play, you know, the officer was shooting to stop the threat. And guess what? You know, when I came on the police force in 83, you know, we shot the kill, right? And then, of course, about maybe 15 years later, they changed the verbiage, member chief, and now you no longer shot the kill, you shot to stop the threat. Did they change the zone or where your shots went when they changed it to shoot to stop the threat? No, they didn't, you know. So, you know.
And we never try to kill an active shooter. We just neutralize them.
Yeah. So, hey, this has been to some tough topics. I'm glad we had you on the day show, Dr. Schultz. And, you know, you're still making, you're still effectively effecting change positively for the law enforcement community. And so thanks very much for being on the show and taking advantage of the reach that we have. And I'm hoping that at SHOT Show, and I know that we're cutting to the Wounded Blue time here, Randy won't mind. But when you're walking around the SHOT Show next week, I hope people are coming up to you and say, hey, Dr. Schultz, I see you on Leo Roundtable. I hope that's what happens. So, but anyhow, thanks so much for being on the show. Appreciate it.
I'll be
that.
Wearing a mask.
I know better. Hey, I do want to mention the Wounded Blue, the woundedblue.org, Lieutenant Randy Sutton's 501c3, helping cops of the world are hurt. I support them, you know, monthly. So I encourage everybody else to do that too. A shout out to our sponsors. We have Gauls.com, our title sponsor, ComplianceTechnologies.com, AeroPrecisionUSA.com, GunLearn.com, Medicare.live, SafeguardRecruiting.com, TubeBells.com, and finally, FishOrlandoBass.com with Zach Bass Fishing Charter. We'll see you guys back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.